Were any of your formative crushes cartoon characters? Are any of your current crushes cartoon characters? If so, allow this podcast to be a warm bath of affirmation for those feelings you feel. I'm comedy writer and 42-year-old child, Gabby Hutchison Crouch, and I remain as delighted by those moving drawings as a Victorian looking at her first zoetrope. Why do they appeal? Let's find out with the help of some funny guests who are here to talk about the animated characters that make the words ba-dum, ba-dum appear above their heads. Will we find something out about early crushes, pop culture and sexuality? Or will we just complain about the post-Aladdin animated nipple shortage? Whatever we do, I hope it'll help you see that the Thundercats fanfic you've already read three times, where Tiger is injured and Panthro carries him into a cave with those big strong arms and tends to his wounds and then they spoon for warmth, is absolutely fine. Welcome to Curiously Drawn. I'm very excited this episode because after nearly two series, I've got an actual cartoonist on instead of just someone I know from writing Radio 4 comedy. Woo! Relevance to the media in question. With me this episode is a Beano artist, currently responsible for Minnie the Minx, as if any grown-up could ever be responsible for Minnie the Minx. She's also the recipient of the International Manga and Anime Festival's Best Comic Prize. And I know she listens to the show because she once tweeted the podcast's account to correct me on Nasho origin story lore. And I genuinely love that we have a Beano official to pick me up on my bullshit. It's not a hello.
Hello,
Gabby. Hello. So, yeah, this is really exciting. It's my, as I say, it's my first actual person who does a job that's got anything to do with this podcast. Please tell me about that, because I was reading the Beano from the age of about eight, and my sister actually used to collect them. She used to keep her old Beanos as like a little collection. So please tell us what it's like.
Oh my God. Well, obviously, you know, the cliche is working for the Beano, best job in the world. probably not far off true, actually. I started reading it when I was about probably four, I think.
Yeah.
So I really kind of grew up with it. But, you know, don't tell anybody, but I was cheating on it with many other comics at the time as well. Because, you know, this was the early 80s and there were loads and loads of comics around that you could dip into. I mean, I carried on reading comics until, I don't know, I was in my early teens, I suppose, and then had a little bit of a break for a while. Not to try and convince anyone that I was cool, because that was never going to work. But just because my favourite comic at the time, which was Oink Comic, shout out to all the pig pals out there.
Yay!
It finished when I was about 13, and I think my teens were essentially a period of mourning for Oink. And then I started again on reading manga when I was at university. That eased me back into the comics world.
Basically, I've come very, very late to the wonderful worlds of manga and anime, and I've done it purely through my daughter. So my daughter's really into that. It was my fault originally, because I got her into Miyazaki, and from there, yeah. So when she was little, it was, we'd watch Disney and stuff, but we'd also watch Kiki and Totoro. And she really, really liked the aesthetic of that. And that just carried on throughout her life. And then she sort of started getting into manga and anime. And then she sort of got me into quite a few of them. Like her favourites she wanted to watch with somebody. She'd usually find the ones with a character who she knew that I would love. And then go, "Mom, watch this with me. You're going to like this one particular dickhead." I was like, yay. I've come to it very late in life, but I'm really enjoying it. It's so funny. Like even the like serious story ones have often got loads of humour in it. And yeah, it's just sort of telling these really exciting stories and remembering to add jokes. That's good.
Yes. Yeah, it really pleases me to hear that, you know, your daughter's into it, because when I was growing up, there were loads of comics that were specifically aimed at girls, like, you know, your Bunties, your Jackies, your Mickeys. Basically, take a girl's name, and there was probably a comic. That's how it worked.
Yeah.
But they all disappeared over time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great that there's still something that the girls can latch on to. I mean, obviously, you know, Beano Dandy, they mm-hmm. are for girls and boys. But I think there's something in particular about comics that have that sort of, dare I say, soap opera kind of structure to
yes.
them. You can buy multiple volumes and there's a long ongoing story.
Yeah.
That was a real feature of the old girls' comics. And, you know, much as I adore humour comics, you don't really tend to get that so much in them.
Mm.
So, yeah, manga is terrific for that. And, of course, as you say, there's plenty of humour in there as well, depending yeah. on what you're reading.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, my daughter's favourite is Attack on Titan, and even that's got jokes, and yeah. you know, amongst the genocide and the body horror.
you've got to have a lighter side to genocide, haven't
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
You haven't. You really haven't.
Yeah, I do believe that that's the subtitle of Attack on Titan. Genocide.
With
a lighter side. We have a character who's addicted to potatoes. It's all good. So yeah, you got into, and that was because I was looking up what you've done apart from the Beano. I was like, oh, she's got like a prize for manga. So you make you're an artist for manga as well. Are you still doing that sort of on the side, or is like the Beano like a full-time hustle now?
Yeah, Beano's pretty much full-time these days. I mean, that was the prize was for my my own manga series, The right. Bizarre Adventures of Gilbert and Sullivan, which I started drawing in the early 2000s. Available in book form, makes a great Christmas present. Except it's probably going to be after Christmas when this goes out, but makes a great birthday present. It's
yeah.
always someone's birthday.
A great Valentine's Day present.
Yeah,
there you go.
yeah. I drew that for a while, and I actually did do a thing called Beano Manga off the back of that for a
wow.
couple of years. The editor saw, you know, Gilbert and Sullivan was basically kind of ridiculous chibi style manga,
right,
but with kind of various Victorian celebrities thrown in.
Wow.
And the editor liked the style of it, and he said, how about if we try and do the Beano characters in this kind of chibi style?
Amazing.
So we did that for a couple of years, and that was great fun.
Yeah. Oh, I really enjoy it when sort of well-established sort of more Western cartoons have a little bit of fun with like anime manga, because you've basically at this point I think any sort of Western animator is gonna like have some anime that they love. So the Simpsons did Death Note recently for one of their Treehouse of Horror, yeah, and they animated it as an anime in that style.
Amazing. Any person whose name is written in this death tome will meet their death and be dead.
Yeah, have a look at it on, I mean, I think it's all been put on that's because obviously it's Treehouse of Horror, so it's just like a little eight minute story. I think that's all been put on YouTube or something. It is really, really good.
Obviously I love The Simpsons, but it's been going on for so long now.
Yeah.
I've fallen out of it.
Yeah, that's
one
me
thing
too.
That I used to keep track of religiously was the Treehouse of Horror specials, because they were always favourites of mine. But even those I haven't seen for quite a while. But I'll be toddling off to Disney Plus after this.
This is a delightful flight of fancy. Speaking of anime, we'll go on to your first choice. So your first choice is a character that I know absolutely nothing about, but he sounds amazing. He's the belligerent frenemy to a protagonist whose magic power is turning into a girl. This guy does not turn into a girl, but he does turn into a small pig. He is incredibly strong but easily distracted. Girls seem to prefer him as a pig. He's Ryoga Hibiki from Ranma. Is it Ranma One Half?
Oh, I think Americans say Ranma One Half. I always say Ranma Half, so I'm going to go with that.
Ranma Half, right. So I know nothing about any of this, but I was sort of having a look at it, and it looks gloriously silly. Sort of speaking of what we like about manga and anime, so can you fill me in on it and what you like about it, and especially what you like about this character?
Well, okay, so I'm going to preface all of this episode by saying that I haven't really had crushes on any characters, but also not any real life people either.
Sure.
So I'm going to approach this in the same way as a couple of your other guests have gone and say I have interest in these characters kind of, I don't know, because maybe I want to befriend them. I feel sorry for them. I want to help them out in some way. Well, this particular character, I would say this approach is, because he is a very unfortunate soul, okay? He's an intense guy. He cries easily. He has absolutely no sense of direction. That's one of his own features. So, okay, you mentioned that he has this curse where he turns into a piglet.
Yeah.
So most of the characters in Ranma Half have some kind of curse because they fell into these cursed springs in China.
Right.
Okay. So Ryoga is so angry with Ranma because Ranma knocked him into the spring which cursed him. But the only reason that he was in China in the first place was that he was supposed to have a duel with Ranma in the empty lot behind their house, behind his house.
Right.
His sense of direction was so bad that it took him 4 days to find the empty lot, by which time Ranma had gone off to China, and then Ryoga happened to turn up in China a bit later because he was lost again.
He stuffed that wild boar with a bamboo umbrella. Well, hot damn. He's so dang strong.
Do you reckon he's human?
Do y'all do the martial arts or something? Hey, y'all okay?
Huh? Tell me, where is Furinkin High School?
Furinkin High School? Hey, don't you know? That there's a map of Tokyo.
Well, of course. The school's around here somewhere.
But this here's Shikoku.
Shikoku? Very well, goodbye.
And this happens consistently throughout the series. He can't make it from one end of the street to the other without getting lost. And Rumiko Takahashi, the creator, is an absolute genius, and I love her. She's a comedy superstar in terms of her plots and characters. He's always lost in a ridiculous way as well. So, you know, he'll turn a corner in the middle of a street in Japan, and then within a panel or two, he's in Okinawa. Or he's at the foot of Mount Fuji, kind of looking around going, where am I now? So he has this miserable life because he never knows where he is. And obviously turns into a piglet when he gets soaked in water. Very unfortunate, even though his pig form is extremely cute.
Yeah.
He's in love with Ranma's fiance, but she keeps his pig form as a pet, and she doesn't know he's really him.
Right.
So it's all very complicated. I mean, Ranma Half is basically, it's love triangle after love triangle after love triangle after love quadrangle, and everyone involved is a hot idiot.
Brilliant.
So there's a lot to like about Ranma Half and the various characters.
That is really, really funny.
I definitely recommend you becoming more acquainted with it. In fact, any of Rumiko Takahashi's work is well worth exploring because, as I say, she's extremely funny, and she does the thing that you mentioned about manga earlier where she kind of makes it look and seem very serious. So Ranma Half is kind of you know, it's a martial arts story. Everybody's doing martial arts. So, you know, you have these very kind of serious and dramatic fight scenes all the time. Mm. But the martial arts is always ridiculous. So it might be, you know, martial arts rhythmic gymnastics 1 week.
Right.
Martial arts flower arranging the next week. Martial arts, you know, ice skating the week after. And everything is always very serious looking, but very, very, very silly. So, and even in the character kind of designs and expressions, you know, they have these extremely serious faces all the time. And then in the next panel, you know, someone's punching them off into the sky, or, you know, they're suddenly exploding in fountains of tears or misery or whatever. It's terrific. And Ryoga is the most extreme example of all of this, because he's very, very emotional. And in fact, he even managed to create a martial arts technique that attacks your enemy using your own depression. The kind of weight that falls from the sky. So he's a character that's very, very easy to feel sorry for. You genuinely just want to give him a hug in every single issue he appears in.
Yeah, it sounds like he's a real try. It sounds like he's just one of these people who just tries really hard and just loses a lot, which I love that. I really love that character type.
He's a massive, massive loser. Massive loser.
Oh, I love a loser.
Most of the half characters are, to be perfectly honest.
Oh, brilliant. I really love a loser. It's interesting. It's another female manga artist. There's one of our other guests for this series chose another manga by a female artist. So I thought that was quite rare. But is it rare to have many women working in manga, or is it like not as rare as I thought it was?
No, I mean, I haven't got any stats to hand, but I think it's pretty common to have female mangaka. And I mean, Rumiko Takahashi's been working since, I'm going to say either the early 80s or the late 70s.
Oh, brilliant.
I'd be surprised if someone doesn't come up with one of the characters from her other best known show on this podcast at some point, Lum the Invader. Because she's an alien with horns and green hair. She flies around wearing a tiger skin bikini and zapping people with electricity.
Oh, and that sounds really hot.
Made for this podcast.
Yes. I mean, I haven't had any guys on yet who are like, oh yeah, I'm really into these anime. It's just been the women who are like into manga and anime so far, but who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? So, moving on to your second choice. I do know this person. Choice two is so mid-90s that he gets his powers from a computer bug activated by a key sequence. He's the one everyone forgets when talking about the Tiny Toons and Animaniacs era of fourth wall breaking Warner cartoons that was, for some reason, spearheaded by Steven Spielberg. He's the geeky teen's postmodern alter ego. He runs around in underwear. It's Freakazoids!
Woo, Freakazoids!
I'm so pleased by what a deep cut this is. I always forget about Freakazoid. Because, there was Tiny Toon Adventures, then there was Animaniacs, and then there was Freakazoid. It was sort of at the tail end of that era where it was all about breaking the fourth wall and celebrity cameos. And for some reason, Steven Spielberg was in charge of it all. I remember really liking Freakazoid, finding him quite cute. What did you like about him?
As well you might. I mean, I was a massive fan of all of the Warner output from the 90s, the ones you just mentioned, Tiny Toons, Animaniacs, Pinky and the Brain, etc. But Freakazoid was just so, so funny and so dumb. And again, I love the aesthetic of it seems like it could be a really serious show. And in fact, yes, it was intended to be a completely straight down the line superhero show. Yeah, they brought Bruce Timm, the character designer, you know, he did Batman the Animated Series as well.
Right.
They brought him on board to basically make another serious superhero show. But at some point down the line, and don't quote me on this, but I think it was actually Spielberg himself said, make it a bit sillier. And they did, but they kept all the serious character designs.
Yeah.
So you've got this great situation where it has the aesthetic of Batman the Animated Series, which is obviously dead serious.
Yes.
But everybody's, you know, talking about going to see a bear on a motorcycle or telling stories about what would happen if all the air was made of wood or buying a, what was it? Was it a chocolate beaver with fudge eyes or something? I mean, with Freakazoid, you can never be 100% sure whether you're quoting something from the show or whether it was just some fever dream you had. It's 50-50 that it's either.
They really pushed the weirdness envelope. Really pushed the weirdness envelope with Freakazoid. Didn't they have like cuts to like actual footage, like sort of old sort of stock footage?
They loved the live action cutaway.
That's always so funny.
Let's not forget that they provided probably the greatest 3.5 minutes of television in history in the Loeb song that was a parody of Hello Dolly.
As a criminal, I shouldn't show my face, so years in seclusion I've spent. But now I realize it's okay to show my face. If anyone squeals, I'll entomb them in cement.
And excellent. Bonjour.
Loby's back and feeling higher than a kite. Oh, give me food, waiters. Baked fried bald or stewed, waiters. Loby's got a hearty appetite.
Obviously, there's something, you know, inherently appealing about superheroes because, you know, they're noble, they're quite buff, always, you know, doing the right thing, but they're often so kind of straight and dour.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, could you imagine sitting down and watching the TV with Batman in the evening? He would not be invested in anything that was going on the screen.
Mm.
So, you know, it would be nice to have a superhero friend / boyfriend who had all the, you know, cool attributes of a superhero, but was also absolutely batshit crazy and up for anything. There was a kind of bridge between Animaniacs and Freakazoid in many ways. I'm not sure if it was chronologically, but it definitely was a similar vibe in terms of, you know, winking to the audience and commenting that it was a TV show and everybody in it was just playing roles.
Yeah, there's no fourth wall in either Freakazoid or Animaniacs. They are just straight up turning to us just constantly and just having a little chat with us. They're both incredibly postmodern. I mean, Warner Brothers does postmodernism amazingly. Obviously, you've got Duck Amuck, which is in, right, well, I studied film at university and I was sort of reading a book about postmodern cinema and there's this massive chapter on Duck Amuck. Duck Amuck is basically, the sort of almost a platonic ideal of postmodern cinema. I mean, it was at that time of, it was sort of mid-century, that sort of postmodern era and it was like, obviously it's a character fighting with its creator. it was just constantly that. Obviously you had like people going back and talking to their, I mean, Steven Spielberg was in it all the time as a character. People would go and have a chat with Steven Spielberg about where's this plot going.
Episode about which of the cartoons was Steven Spielberg's favourite? And
yes,
Winkazoid, Wacko and the Brain all went to ask him, and the punchline was Steven Spielberg saying, "Who are you people?"
Oh, yeah, it was, yeah, no fourth wall at all. And it's kind of, so I think the one Warner Brothers cartoon that has carried that on is probably Teen Titans Go. I don't know, have you seen that?
I've seen a few episodes, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, again, they are no. I mean, I loved the movie Teen Titans Go to the Movie, and again, that is just like there's no fourth wall here at all.
Yeah, they go, yes, I remember now.
The scene where they go to they literally spend time on the Warner movie lot, and they pass the tower and is it Starfire? Yeah, Starfire goes, that is where the Animaniacs live.
Well, you know, if you own the properties, you might as well name drop them.
You might as well name drop. And yeah, again, that was a real sort of, there's no fourth wall here at all. This is just us talking to you. I mean, the end of that film is Robin realising that the film's about to end and that they haven't given a message. They haven't given like a moral message to the children, so he runs up. He runs up as the credits are starting to roll, and grabs the camera and goes, "Kids, ask your parents where babies come from." and then the film ends because he just wants them. He wants there to be a talking point in the car home.
Oh,
and I love that nonsense. All of that stuff that is absolutely, that tickles me so much.
Yes.
Yeah, just chatting to us. And again, sort of getting back to manga and anime, I really love it when you've got mangas and animes that do that, where a character just turns to us and goes, "Well, that was weird."
It's a thing that that has a long history in the Beano as well. You know, we still have the characters talking to the readers and kind of commenting on the action sometimes, and you know, we still have the editor popping up in captions questioning what's going on sometimes. So, you know, we're keeping that going.
It's brilliant, and it's such a rich sense of humour that sort of brings your audience in. Interestingly, this is the second fourth wall breaking blue superhero parody that we've had on this series, because we Julia Rayside chose Banana Man. I think Banana Man, you know, he's from the Beano. That was a blue fourth world breaking superhero parody from the Beano from the 80s. So it's obviously it's a rich tradition that has roots in British culture as well as American and Japanese culture.
Yeah, that's a very solid choice, actually, Banana Man.
Right. I mean, a lot of it was because of Graham Garden, but still, he does have a very hot voice.
Well, fair enough. Fair dues. Yeah. I mean, he's quite a
goodie. And I think with Freakazoid as well, the same as with Banana Man, there's a lot about his confidence that is quite attractive. I remember, when was I watching? I would have been watching it as a sort of a mid-teenager. And he does come across as this kind of, he's got the kind of energy of a friend's hot older brother. Is the energy I give him. Yeah. Sort of a guy who's, yeah, he's kind of confident, like a little bit older. I think the same as with Banana Man, it's like a geeky young guy who gets turned into this sort of more adult superhero. And I think there's sort of a lot of this. That's sort of like about a male fantasy about what if I could be like hotter and buffer and stuff like that. But I think also it is attractive if you find male characters attractive, that element of confidence.
Because Freakazoid is certainly never doubting his own abilities, whereas, you know, Dexter's alter ego is a bit of a bit of a drip, to be honest. But I've just realized that both of my first two choices are guys that turn into something else.
But maybe
that's to do with the era we're living in. Maybe it's because we're all living in straightened times. It's like, buy one, get one free.
It only ran for two series, which
very unfortunate. But I mean, they were quite lucky to get the second season, I think, because my understanding is that by the end of season one, the network was going, why are we making this exactly?
It's really weird.
That's a lot of money, but we don't understand it. But they did manage to get to the end of season two, and if I remember rightly, they ended the last episode with everyone singing We'll Meet Again. How ironic that was. But it's a perfect two seasons, though, you have to say it. It definitely bears up to rewatching.
Yeah. And sometimes you can have something that's perfectly good that's only two seasons. I mean, Gravity Falls is two seasons, and that is perfect.
It absolutely is perfect.
Yeah, so that's better two series than nothing at all.
Absolutely.
Well, let's move on to choice three, who I've got a lot to say about. We've gone from starting the show with an anime boy who I knew nothing about to ending the show with an anime man who I am so obsessed with that when you put him on your list, I replied with full caps lock for a whole email because I was so excited. He's tough but tender, gruff yet soft. He wears a pug pinny over a sharp black suit. He keeps trying to cut his own finger off over minor housekeeping fails. He is the former Yakuza, now throwing all of his gangland intensity into caring, cleaning, and cooking for his wife. It's Immortal Tatsu from Way of the House Husbands.
Oh.
Oh my God. Right, you say what you like about Tatsu, and then I'll fill up about an hour talking about what I like about him.
Okay, so it didn't actually have to be Tatsu.
Yeah.
It's a genre of character that I have to put in the final place here. It's the character who is a weirdly intense, competent guy who has got your back. So Tatsu is a perfect example of that, but there are others out there. I'm going to name check Bob Belcher. Please.
Oh my God, he is so weirdly hot.
Yeah, and Speckle from Tuca and Bertie, good example of this as well.
Yes.
Basically, any male character that is, you know, who has got his shit together and is a devoted partner. Is that not basically Jessica Rabbit for middle-aged women?
Right.
There's no way you cannot be drawn to that.
Yeah, it is so attractive. And Bob Belcher is not drawn to be, like, conventionally attractive. But he's so hot. And it is...
Wouldn't you be happy to be married to that
man? Oh, my God. He is such a sweetheart. He's so lovely. He is such a loving dad. Actually, with all of these characters, the woman in their life gets to be silly, have the silly, wacky adventures. Linda is definitely the silly one in that relationship. Bertie, Bertie is obviously less silly than Tuca, because she's the Abby to Kuzulana. But yeah, she gets to have the adventures, and Speckle is the one who cares. Bringing in that sort of caring archetype. Oh God, Bob, Bob Belcher, God damn it. I'm sure that somebody will choose Bob Belcher as their main choice one of these days, and I can just wax lyrical about that guy because I love him so much.
I love The Simpsons up to a point where I fell out watching it, but in general, I love The Simpsons. I adore The Amazing World of Gumball. Mm. Family Guy has its moments, but I'm so over this trope of
the wacky dad who's shit
man child who is dragging down the incredibly competent woman he's with. It's like enough, let's do things a little bit differently. You know, it's very frustrating to me that there's been this sort of push in the last couple of decades for cartoon makers to say, right, okay, well, we've not really paid attention to female characters for a long time. So let's have very intelligent, very capable, very interesting female characters. And then they do that, and they are always second fiddle to a useless guy.
Yes.
It's like, guys, stop that.
Yeah.
And what you just said about Gravity Falls, is an absolutely perfect example of not doing that.
Yes.
Because you've got a very competent male character, mm-hmm. you've got a very competent female character, they're equal leads, but neither of them are perfect.
Yeah.
And neither of them are the funny one. They're both the funny one.
Mm.
They have strengths and weaknesses that kind of balance each other out.
Yeah.
So the whole trope of, oh, the guy is an idiot, but he's the funny one, kind of goes out the window because Mabel and Dipper are both hilarious.
Yeah.
And again, if you look at a character like Tatsu or Speckle or Bob Belcher or whatever other example of that sort of character you want to give, they're both funny.
Oh, God,
they're all funny. But, the guy isn't someone that you want to slap. Tatsu obviously has an edge because the whole thing is drawn to make him look moody and hot and mysterious.
He
contrasts so beautifully with all the very, very mundane stuff he's doing.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, with Tatsu, he's the one of those three characters that you mentioned, all of whom are really attractive in their personality. Tatsu is the one who is drawn to be a conventionally attractive adult man. Like, he is the cartoon of Tatsu is crazy hot. Both his Japanese and his American dub voices are crazy hot. Where the House Husband is a manga that's also, there is a Netflix anime that's basically a PowerPoint. It's really weird. Basically, the creator wanted the animator not change the manga at all. So the anime is basically the manga, but sort of cut out and sort of moved around. So they don't really animate the manga. They've just colored it in.
Here's the money. Just bring me the goods pronto. I have my own bag.
Can I have a points card?
What the hell's all this?
Happy birthday to you.
No way, this is Polycure. You really went out and bought this for me?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. That's so sweet. I love it. And this really doesn't matter at all, but I've already got this one.
I must pay!
I kind of like that it has that sort of 80s Paddington vibe.
It is very strange, but it was a deliberate choice that was made. And that's on Netflix. But also it's quite big in Japan just from Tatsu's appeared in like loads of adverts and stuff like that. And they have made a live action series of it. And then they made a live action movie of the series, which annoyingly I have not managed to watch yet because it's not available in Britain in any sort of, even in like the naughty streaming. But yeah, there's a live action version of it, and Jesus Christ, the man that they cast to play him in the live action version. Fucking hell. And in the live action version, they've given him a stepdaughter as well, so I can use the anime dad klaxon. I will edit it in at this point. Is literally an anime dad, but he's an anime stepfather, and I love that. I love when these guys are giving these sort of caring roles, especially over children who they have elected to look after, rather than children who are their biological. The children, obviously, that's always very cute as well. But I love an anime foster dad. I love an anime stepdad. I love an anime adoptive dad. I love all the dads. I just love all the dads. But yeah, what I love about A, he's fucking hot. He's really, really gorgeous. He's like this, he's absolute Gabby Catnip. He's about 40. He's about my age. He's got a little scar, but he's super ripped. He's got amazing cheekbones, like really intense eyes. He has got a bit of facial scruff, love that. And he's got coded PTSD, which, hello, I love a character with a bit of coded mental illness. And he's so intense. Just the intensity with which he loves his wife. And again, Mika gets to be a bit of a dipshit, which is brilliant. You know, she is competent in her job, but it's a sort of a role reversal of that sort of hyper-competent wife who stays at home and looks after the husband who's just some guy. And in this one, you've got a hyper-competent, really, really caring and intense man who just throws all of this intensity into looking after his wife, who really is just some lady. She's just got a white collar job. She's a designer, and I think so. From how far I've managed to read on the manga, at one point she sort of rescued him. She physically lifted him up and carried him out of the street corner where he was bleeding out, just latched onto her, and he was like, "Oh my God, you cared for me at a moment that nobody else would, and now I'm now you're my boss. You're my heart. You're the boss of my heart." She's just some lady, and she loves like children's cartoons, so it's like, oh, he loves dipshit women who are into cartoons, you know. He could be made for me.
It's a no-brainer, isn't
it? Absolutely no-brainer.
I really love the way that the show is not in any way dismissive of the fact that he is a house husband as well. There's no suggestion that it's like beneath him. He really seems to be into it.
Yeah.
And I think that's because he's just so intense. You kind of get the sense that no matter what he was doing, he would be giving 110% to it.
Oh, God,
so yeah. If he's a house husband, he's going to be the absolute pinnacle of house husbandness. When he was a Yakuza, he was, you know, he was the absolute terror of
Japan. Like,
yeah,
everyone's still really fucking scared of him. And another thing that I love about that, about the trope that you're talking about, that it's not, the joke isn't that, oh, he's doing work that's beneath him. He starts to influence other Yakuza to leave and to throw themselves into suburban living, and sort of shows them that that there's a real, that true honor comes from that, and true living well will come from that. So there's a younger man who he mentors, Masa, who is just really, really funny. Masa is really funny. So he's teaching Masa to look after himself. There's also, it's not gendered as well. So there's a female former Yakuza boss, Hibari, who he discovers she had to leave the Yakuza life, and she is now working as a cashier at a supermarket, and that's really funny. Just, you know, the joke is it's Yakuza doing suburban things, not it's a big tough man doing women's work. I love it. It's so good.
Seriously, yeah. Everybody who hasn't seen it, who is listening to this, please go out and watch it, because it is incredible.
They're really, really short. They're little. So this isn't one of those shows that has like a big story arc. It is like little slice of life adventures. They're very, very domestic. They're very, very sweet. It's sort of creating this really silly world in sort of somewhere in suburban Japan. There's all of these former Yakuza who are just trying to get by and live normal lives. And it's the worlds colliding. It's fish out of water, but it's also really, it's really positive and affirming. It's gorgeous. I love it.
And also really, really funny. Can't overemphasize that. It's so funny.
Oh, well, thanks for letting me ramble on about that guy. I will finish off by asking you one last question, which is that if you were able to make one of these characters flesh and blood and bring them into the real world, who would you choose, and would you try to romantically pursue them?
So I think I couldn't possibly compromise Tatsu and Miku's relationship. Yeah. So I'm going to say Ryoga, but not to romantically pursue.
Yeah.
I'm going to give him a hug, give him a phone with GPS and a hefty data package and let him try and find his own happiness.
Oh, that sounds really nice. That sounds absolutely ideal. Before we go, are there any? Is there anything you'd like to give a shout out about? Any projects or anything?
Well, obviously, everybody should be buying the Beano every week.
Yes.
I have a big project coming up in 2023 that I'm not allowed to talk about at the moment. But if you keep your eye on my social media, it will appear there at some point.
Mm-hmm. What's your social media?
At Victorian Clam on Instagram and Twitter.
Oh, thank you ever so much.
Thank you, Gabby. It's been a pleasure.
Huge thanks to Laura Howell. For more credits and details, see @curiously_drawn on Twitter.